program, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790. Good to be here, folks. Let's see. Well, before we get into all the serious stuff, Robbie, I've got to tell you, you know Lucero in the office, our intrepid HR person, and I think, you know, HR, they're always the people that take themselves so seriously, the hall monitors of the office, right? So I was in her office the other day, and I see on her desk, she's got a glass, you know, we all have these glass desktops, and underneath it, there's a surface that faces upward, so you can put things under the glass. And so I thought it'd be, and she's got, what does she have? She's got pictures, two photographs of her kids under the glass and nothing else. Her office is otherwise just bare, really clean. So I thought it'd be really funny if I took my picture and cut it out, you know, kind of in the same shape as her kids, and put it in between her kids so that when she comes in the next morning, she's got a nice little reminder of her boss, just so she knows how much I love her. Well, so it went, folks, the joke went exactly as planned. You know, people went by the office, could see through the, you know, see through the glass window, thought it was really funny, got some laughs. So that was, wow, that was a few days ago. So yesterday, I'm in my office, and what happens is this. I've got some workers coming in to work on my private bathroom. Yes, my private bathroom. And you've got to have some ceiling work done. So I come back from a meeting, and all of a sudden there's five guys in the room. They're making all sorts of noise. I said, would you mind if I just close the door? Because I have to have this. Robbie, you're laughing. Do you know where this is going? So I say, guys, let me just close the door. I've got to talk to Lucero. So as I'm closing the door, Lucero just turns beet red, this panic on her face. And it's like, oh no, nothing I plan, no joke I ever planned goes as I would like. And what happened was she had posted a picture of herself on the inside of my door to my bathroom, which now was plainly visible to all five, you know, Hispanic construction guys who, and they were dying. I mean, I quickly opened the door. I hadn't seen it. I didn't even notice it, right? So I opened the door and I put my head around the corner and I see the thing up, and it's it's just this really quirky pic. Anyway, hilarious. I think she's still probably red from that. So you know what it is when you play a joke on somebody, it doesn't quite work out. That was Lucero. That was good. It was well planned. Execution good. It just didn't work out. Folks, big week. We had a big decision earlier on Tuesday, didn't we? You know, some say it's forecasting, right? It's forecasting. It really tells the future of how things are going to go. And before you think I'm talking about the Iowa caucuses, you're wrong. Punxsutawney Phil. Yeah, it's a real thing. Yes, Robbie, you know, it's not just that one movie, which is a great classic, right? Groundhog Day. It's a real thing. There's a bunch of grown men that put on top hats and they stand outside of, well, they say it's supposed to be his natural habitat, but really this creature's in a Punxsutawney Phil, the groundhog. They put him in a cage, and if he comes out and sees his shadow, what is it? If he comes out and stays out and sees his shadow, there's going to be a long winter. Or is it the other way around? It's the other way around. Robbie's nodding his head. He's an expert. All I can tell you, folks, is number one, Punxsutawney Phil has decided that we're going to have an early spring. So good news. for everyone that was in Pennsylvania to watch that when it was 22 degrees outside. I don't know what that spells for us here with El Nino. Although I'll tell you, last weekend, what about that rain and those winds and everything? Crazy. So maybe El Nino is going to clear up pretty soon. And the other thing I got to tell you is, what was that? Remember, what was it last year when de Blasio, the crazy leftist kooky mayor from New York, was out there as their celebrity in attendance and actually was supposed to handle Punxsutawney Phil, and he dropped him. And then the zoo tried to cover up the fact that Punxsutawney Phil died from the resulting injuries. Yeah, so I guess it's not the same groundhog, right? It's sort of like the Dalai Lama. You know, every time, every few years, there's a new reincarnation. Sooner if you've got a nice hapless politician that comes along and drops your ass on the ground. So yeah, was there a shadow? I don't know. What happens when you drop the groundhog? That's a long ass winter. I think that's what that is. It's a bad omen. I think actually New York had some really bad snow that year, and you guys have your mayor to blame for that one. All right, Iowa. Wow. Yes, we're still talking about it. It's been a few days. In fact, now's a really good time to talk about it because I think some of the dust has cleared. What can I tell you, folks? Impressive, impressive win by Ted Cruz. And when you, it's important to take kind of strip away some facts. So let's look at it. So we know how the vote broke down, and we'll talk about the Democratic side in a few. But so Ted Cruz wins, and he wins by 4 percentage points over Trump. And Trump, what is it, ties with Rubio. Or no, he's just a point ahead of Rubio. Trump's second, Rubio comes in third. So now, what does this all mean? Well, for one, let's talk about what Iowa is. The reason Iowa is such a big deal, and we're here in California, we're scratching our heads going, how does this even matter, right? This is a state that many of us have never been to. We confuse it with Ohio, right? Iowa, Ohio, which is it? Why are they such a big deal? Why do they get to play kingmaker? And before I explain to you why they don't really play kingmaker, I'll tell you this is why this race is important. Because we, for months and months of months, and I've said this before, have had poll after poll after poll, and we hear who's up, we hear who's down, we hear who's important, we hear who we think is important, we hear who our neighbors thinks is important, we hear who Fox News thinks is important, and then there's a vote. And there's an actual result. There's something that goes into the bank. And it's not just the result psychologically, right, of here's some winners and here's some losers. But you also walk away. Now you're starting to award delegates, right? And the more delegates you amass, you know, that's how you get to your party's nomination. That's how you end up, you know, winnowing the field down to two candidates. Three if you invite Ross Perot or Mayor Bloomberg to the party. So there it is. All right. That's why Iowa matters. There's a vote. And the first thing that happens when there's a vote of this kind, some of the bottom tier candidates drop out. I think almost right away, that the night of, on the Democratic side, O'Malley dropped out. And it was pretty funny. If you're watching the event, they had a split screen, you know, Hillary headquarters and Bernie headquarters, and there were lots of people there looking very optimistic and socially responsible. And then you went to the O'Malley event, and I kid you not, it was like somebody's retina had detached. It was dark, and the custodial staff were walking through cleaning up. I mean, it was sad. It was so sad. And so he suspended his campaign that night. Who came the next day? Was it Huckabee, I think? Huckabee decided that night or the next day. Anyway, so immediately people begin to drop off. They immediately begin to drop off. And so you start to narrow the field, and we've seen that over the past few days, haven't we? So that's one way, another way that Iowa is important, because you, all of a sudden now, and we're headed into New Hampshire, there'll be another election with more delegates to be awarded and also another opportunity to cut the lower tier candidates. And in a crowded field like we have on the Republican side, it's a big deal. Okay, before we talk about all the Republicans, I'll just briefly touch on Hillary and on Bernie Sanders. We've got to put this up on the website, Robbie. We've got to put up a picture of what it looked like when Bernie Sanders was announcing his candidacy for president. Have you seen this? you know, it honestly looked like he was there's five people in attendance. There was a tiny little podium set up with two microphones. And it's the whole picture worth a thousand words. It is insane to grasp what the Bernie Sanders campaign has become. From lunatic fringe, where he quite frankly belongs, to the lunatic fringe that for some reason a significant number of people think is mainstream. If folks, if you've got half a brain, you know that this whole concept of socialism, where you reach into the pocket of somebody else to take care of yet another person and perpetuate this on and on and on and on over time, means that, as Margaret Thatcher said, eventually you run out of other people's money and you eventually what? Completely destroy everything that this country was built on. It's OK. But, you know, OK, when I come back, I'm going to explain to you folks, I'm going to explain why Bernie won. Or got close, really. I mean, he tied Hillary in New Hampshire. I mean, in Iowa. But why it's not, why it can't continue? It can't continue because of some very basic statistics here that are true in Iowa, but won't be true other places. This is Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back after this. When you grow up, live like a good boy. And Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And so, okay, so Hillary wins by a coin toss, right? I mean, that's they're neck and neck, and then they literally toss a coin. So whatever. The point is that Bernie Sanders cleaned up, and he came from far behind in the race. Yeah, if you, like we were saying, I mean, you look at that picture of him announcing his candidacy, and there were, you know, 3.5 people there. One thing to remember when it comes to the primaries and it comes to Iowa, well, in the primaries in general, it's always, you're always dealing with the predominant group, and in a sense, the most radical fringe of each party. Okay? And that radical fringe, I think the smaller the state, the more the radical fringe stands out. So if you take a state like Iowa, okay, statistically, I mean, they did a lot of polling on this leading up to the caucuses and predicted, well, a lot of smart money was on a Sanders victory. And the reason is that, believe this or not, 43% of likely caucus goers self-identify as socialist. That's a lot, folks. That's a lot. Okay, it's below the national average. I mean, it's higher than the national average. Okay, and it's so already going into something, going into the caucus, right? Bernie's got this great base of people who identify with him and identify with his ideology over Hillary. So forget the email scandal. Forget, you know, forget Bill Clinton and his love of raping women. I mean, forget all of that. Okay. It's right going into the race. You've got that highly charged, highly motivated, highly engaged, tends to be youthful part of the vote that is very motivated to help Bernie. And what did this come down to? It's the Clinton machine. They don't call it that for nothing. And remember 8 years ago, right? 8 years ago, Obama beat the Clinton machine and really soundly. I think it was something crazy, Robbie. Do you remember? I mean, it was by 20 points he beat Hillary. And one of the reasons is he just out-organized her on the ground. And I think my suspicion is that's what happened here. Hillary really out. She's been on the ground. Her people and her operatives have been on the ground here from the beginning. And they simply out-organized Bernie. And Bernie might have had the better message, and he might have had, you know, and he frankly had the base to go after. But he just didn't have the boots on the ground organized the way that Clinton did. And Clinton has the whole Democratic Party machine behind her, right? I mean, they're in the bag for Hillary. They're in the bag for her. So on the Republican side, okay, this is fundamentally, there's something that you have to understand, and it makes Trump's second place finish all the more respectable. Iowa is a very conservative state on the Republican side. And it's not just conservative in a conservative libertarian kind of way, but it's a very socially conservative state, right? They like their God. They like their God in politics. They like their God. I mean, they're into it. They're a pro-life. They're pro-life. That's their thing. And they're values voters, right? They're values voters, and they identify largely, and it's a high percentage, devoutly religious, 62% in Iowa. So that is, for a guy like Trump, who is a socially liberal Republican, that's a headwind. That's something that you have to overcome. And when you carve out a quarter of a vote in a crowded field, and the winner is only 4 points ahead of you, and the winner has a father who is an evangelical pastor, and he's campaigning actively for you, that's a big deal. And that Rubio came in third is also not a surprise. I mean, he's another very socially conservative guy. And he, if I had a dollar for every time that Rubio talked about Jesus in this campaign in Iowa, I could put a lot of money in that communion dish. Guys, remember the day before the caucuses, Trump accidentally put some cash in the communion dish. He thought it was the collection plate. At least he's being charitable, right? So there it is. No, I don't think. Do you think he lost because of that? You think that cost him 5% of the vote? I don't know. I doubt it. But at any rate, so you've got out of the three winners, right? Well, I say three winners because everybody else now is relegated to third tier status. And it's kind of sad for Ben Carson, right? Because really, Ted Cruz's operatives were putting the word out at these caucus sites that Ben was dropping out, which is a shady, shady, shady thing to do. So maybe Ben Carson would have performed better, you know, if he didn't have a little whisper campaign on the day of the event. So he's crying foul about that. But fundamentally, if you take the three winners, the three leaders, and mind you, let's not read into this 4%. If you listen to Fox News, all you will hear, well, all I heard for 3 days was Trump lost, Cruz won, and Trump should have done the debate. And oh, if he had only done the debate, he doesn't seem like such a good idea now. And that's really just, it's just crap. Because one, well, first, of course, you have no way of knowing. But again, I'm applying some logic to it. The debate was, a debate like that is always set up to Shanghai the leader. Right? The way you get, the way you get your notches in your belt if you're a journalist and you're asking these questions is if you can't, you know, you've got a Candy Crowley all over the candidate. And of course, I'm referring to that CNN hag who basically assassinated Mitt Romney with her crazy biased questions when in the debate against Obama. We all remember that. It was biased. And so what it, the debate, again, I'm not here, it was like, not going to revisit that, but I'm saying that here's the thing. In spite of everything, Trump performed really well. And here's another thing. It's not a winner-take-all primary. So remember how I was telling you about the delegates, folks. The caucuses are all about, and these primaries are all about the candidates racking up their delegates, right? And you need a certain number of delegates in order to get your party's nomination at the convention. And so here's how it broke down, regardless of what the percentage is. On the Republican side, Cruz got 8 delegates. Trump got 7. Rubio got 7. So did you guys even know that? Yeah, that's how close this was. That's how close this was. Trump and Rubio are tied for delegates, and they're each only one behind. They're each only one behind Cruz. Now, a distant fourth is Carson, and he got 3 delegates. And here's the best part. It must have been the guacamole, because I tell you, Jeb got a delegate. And I understand that he spent about $2,700 for every person that cast a vote for him. He and probably had to throw in a guacamole, too. I mean, that's a lot. They don't even pay that much for elections in Africa. That's, I mean, right? I mean, that's a banana republic kind of thing. So, all right. So $2,700 it cost him. There's no way he's out, right? He's done. Rand, I don't know. It's not going to work out for him. So you start to, but again, at least getting a delegate, you can tell your supporters I'm in the race, even though you register only what, 2%. So on the Democratic side, the math is a lot funnier. Here's the takeaway from this. The race is very close. The field has been narrowed. And in a couple days here in New Hampshire, that's when things get real. And let's talk about this. Just some historical perspective on Iowa. And before we as Californians feel too left out in the cold that they're making all of our decisions, Iowa really hasn't decided much in the last 30 years. That's the truth. So in 1980, right, we all know Reagan got the nomination. He lost Iowa to a guy named Bush. Interesting. Then in 1988, when Bush got the nomination, he lost Iowa to Bob Dole. And then Bob Dole won in 96 and then was nominated. So whatever weird kind of, chain reaction nightmare that was going on there, whatever the curse was, Bob Dole ended it. He got nominated and then he lost. So what is it? I think Bush, is he the only one on the Republican side in the last 20 years, 30 years that has 30 years more that won Iowa, won the nomination and then went on to win the general election? So Iowa, as far as for us Republicans, here's what you've done right. You've picked one winner in the last 35 years. You know, it has to do, folks, it all has to do with a relatively small number of people. You see these percentages and you go, oh my gosh, they're winning 24% of the vote. And you realize that the spread between first and second place is a matter of 1,000 to 2,000 votes. Because it's really, it's that small. It's politics that local. And you're dealing with a relatively extreme representatives from each party. So after this, let me wrap a few thoughts up on this. And, well, we still got a few things to talk about. So, folks, stay tuned. And, folks, when we come back, I'm going to give you some ideas of where I think this is all going to go. Back after this, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Well, you just laugh it off, it was all okay. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Okay, so to the half of Iowan Democrats that thought Bernie Sanders was going to be a good idea for the country, thanks but no thanks, and nothing. Well, not nothing. I mean, the evidence. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to prove why this guy's wrong, but I'll tell you one thing that I read in the news the other day was about the Walmart store that is closing in L.A. And the reason it's closing is because the city has raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Okay. Now you would think, all right, let's back up here. Every liberal certainly every socialist loves the concept of the minimum wage. And in fact, I'll tell you one more thing. Pretty much anybody who has never taken an economics course or has taken an economics course but been high for most of it thinks that the minimum wage is a great idea. But here's an example exactly of what goes wrong when you raise the minimum wage to wherever your fancy takes you. Because, look, the cost of wages is a real cost to a company that has a certain profit margin that it has to make. Okay? Now, if you raise wages, and this is happening not just at Walmart. If you raise wages at some point, it becomes not profitable for that company to operate. The best anecdotal example of this is what's happening in food service in LA County. Food service is going to two extremes. Super high end, right, where you have white linen and fancy food and it's $150 a head. And there it makes sense to pay people a $15 minimum wage. Not makes sense, but it's you can do it because you're the one waiter there that is taking care of four or five tables. Those tables are producing enough revenue to cover his expense. And the medium to low end is where it gets into trouble. And what I'm hearing is more concepts being created that involve reducing labor altogether, cutting actual service, having actual people wait on you and serve you in line, adding automation, right? This new restaurant that's going to be where you type your order into a menu, and there's three or four people working in the back instead of the 20 that worked there before. So what happened to those 15, 16 people that were eliminated? Where do they go? And see if, as a politician, if your answer is where they're going to go to other jobs that are now offering $15 an hour. You're wrong, because this kind of economizing, this kind of workforce reduction and optimization, which really is just a fancy word for saying, how can I get, now that I have to pay more for these people, how do I get more revenue out of them? That job, I had three people doing it. Now I'm going to have two. That job over there, two people were doing it. Now I'm going to have one person doing it. And wait, I mean, I'm being cynical here. But it's true. This is how companies operate, because guess what? Just because minimum wage went down doesn't mean that their rent that went up doesn't mean that other expenses went down. To the contrary, every business gets goods, gets services provided to it as part of its operation. And the cost of those services are going up because it's a two-prong approach, right? Optimization, getting more out of the people that you have, getting rid of you know, maybe some people that you don't need, making the people that you have work harder, and then passing the any residual cost into the price of your good or your service. That's what happens. Money does not just get created out of thin air. You know, Bernie Sanders is the tooth fairy. And that's what you guys think. You think you put your wish under your pillow and you wake up in the morning and there's money there. Well, guess where that money came from? And I know your kids are listening, so we're just going to agree to know what I'm talking about. That money didn't just come from anywhere. It comes from somewhere. And so the when the math doesn't add up, you're going to cut and add. You're going to look for ways to add revenue by raising your price and cut your expenses by, cutting the one thing that you can cut, which is where this price increase is, which is labor. And it doesn't just affect mom and pop businesses. So in Los Angeles, we have some really nice areas and we have some not so nice areas, don't we? And there was an area in particular where, you know, the people, local people, and where was this? Was this in Chinatown? Where was this? It was in Chinatown. And there's predominantly Hispanic and Asian residents in this area, and it's low income. And for years, they're lobbying the city council to bring in, to entice, to attract a big box retailer. Why? Not because they want the big box retailer to exploit them, but because they're getting exploited. Ironically, right? This is the part of the story that gets lost. They're getting exploited by these little mom and pop businesses like liquor stores and AMPM or whatever, these little bodegas. And what do they have? High prices, and a relatively limited selection of goods. And you know this, statistically speaking, right, that groceries cost more in economically depressed areas. Did you know this? I always wondered about that. I guess rich people are more discerning. More price sensitive. The reason is, truthfully, is there's more competition in those areas. You got an Albertsons, you got a Stater Brothers, you've got, in these low income areas, when they don't have a Walmart, it's a bunch of these small operators, small liquor stores that carry a handful of goods, don't carry very much of them. So, you know, there's just a restricted supply of goods unless that person goes and travels far, which isn't possible if they don't have a car. Or they have a car that they don't have enough money to buy and put gas into. So they get these folks in the neighborhood, they get their dream, they get their Walmart, right? And they finally get a great big selection of goods, low prices, 33,000 square feet of retail bliss. Drugstore, grocery store, and probably the most amazing people watching on earth. And then this whole fight for 15 nonsense campaign begins with minimum wage. Because to the untrained ear, the idea of raising everyone's minimum wage up by however many dollars is a great idea. It's a great idea. But it isn't. Because what did Walmart do? They look at the store. They look at how many people they have to have. They look at all the other regulations that LA is burdening them with. And they throw it all into a spreadsheet, and the number that comes out at the bottom makes it not worth their time to operate. So here's the deal. Walmart is not a charity. They're in it to win it. And there's nothing wrong with that. And more importantly, that's how it works. That's America. That's capitalism. Of course, you know, when you look at Iowa and voters there, you know, only 38% of Democratic voters there identify as capitalist or capitalistic. So that's where Bernie came from again. I mean, they don't even know what capitalism is. It's my guess. I don't think they know what socialism is either, because I don't think they'd get a new iPhone every 6 months, right? So at any rate, that's it. Who loses? Poor people lose. Good job. Because now these good people that live in this neighborhood have to pay twice as much for their groceries. So, you know, these unintended consequences of liberalism, there are many. I've talked to you folks before about how I went to Czechoslovakia in December, following what, a month and a half following the revolution there. Meaning, when I went there about 2 months earlier, they were in a fully command economy run by the state, which is what, you know, I think really Bernie Sanders would love to see. And it means, for example, that a store, nobody owns the store. The store belongs to the government. The government operates the store in a way that is beneficial for everyone. Now, doesn't that sound good? But nobody owns the store, really, except for the state. And the state doesn't care because it's all run by bureaucrats. So there's nobody there. The person in the sitting in the store, I witnessed this. A lady sitting in the store reading a magazine. Behind her, four giant crates of food waiting to be unpacked. The store shelves, empty. What's the problem? No, I'll get to it tomorrow. No one's going to fire her. It's not her store. That store isn't competing with the store down the street. Right? And so what do you have? You've got an entire economy with nothing, no motivation, there is no fuel that drives that economic engine. And the fuel that drives the economic engine is the need and want to get ahead, the need and want to build a better product than the next guy, and the need and desire to make something for yourself, and you have to be able to keep some of it to stay motivated. And Bernie and his 90% tax rate is just insanity. Couple more things about this, can you imagine that segregation is coming back to college campuses? Can you imagine? Can you imagine? 2016, and we have segregation coming back to at least one college campus. I kid you not. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Welcome back to the program. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. One more thing I forgot. I neglected to mention about the minimum wage, and that is this. Perhaps you've heard there's this phenomenon going on in Europe, and a couple countries are proposing it to actually just kind of do away with their welfare system and pay everybody $2,200 a month or whatever it is. Just pay everybody some fairly high flat amount, and then you're on your own after that. I'm not sure where that money comes from. I haven't really read into it, but the same truth, what I'm about to say, it also applies to that, and it applies to minimum wage, and that is this, right? the pricing is not based on the value of a good. That's a myth, right? So my computer, right? I'm looking here at my Mac laptop. This Mac laptop costs what it costs, not because of the value of its components or of what its value as this, you know, intrinsic or extrinsic thing in my life that helps me stay organized and do my work and all that jazz. The cost of it comes from what the market will bear. Okay? So, to some extent, yes, Apple can charge more for its laptops than its competitors because we generally perceive that the competition is crap. But not too much more. Otherwise, you're going to be like Apple in the 1990s when you're producing $8,000 computers and you're basically going belly up because nobody's buying your stuff. Right? You remember all that. How much did the Lisa computer cost, Robbie? It was like $8,000. Anyway, but where am I going with this? Pricing comes from what the market will bear. Pricing comes from supply and demand and what people are able to purchase with their dollars. If you give, and bear, this is the basic thesis of what I'm going to say here. If you give everyone $10, prices over that they didn't have yesterday, prices will eventually rise by $10, give or take. But they will rise because what you've done across the board is raise everyone's purchase power. And pricing will reflect that. Pricing will reflect that. Give you an example. If Apple, again, iPhones, what are they? Average iPhone's about $300. Okay. That number came from somewhere. People are willing to buy that. Companies are willing to subsidize, however the subsidies work out or however it is. People are willing to spend that. If everyone suddenly got a $100 coupon to buy from the government to buy an iPhone, that's a very specific thing, but just bear with me. If everyone gets $100, what are you thinking? Just think for yourself. What are you thinking all of a sudden? You're going, oh, maybe I could do something a little bit better this year. Maybe I can splurge a little bit more on that iPhone. You're not thinking, okay, I'm going to save $100 and apply this coupon. No. You're thinking, how am I going to consume more? Or how am I going to get bigger and better? And the companies are going to respond to that by offering higher priced goods. The quality and the value of the good isn't necessarily going to go up. So if you, for example, I predict, and you look at this, and Robbie, we're going to stay on the story. As soon as you raise minimum wage, what happens to rents? Rents follow. They go up over time. And it's like that fundamentally with not just minimum wage, not just welfare, but also with the biggest welfare project of all time, which is medicine. The best example I have to give you is I have a dog. My dog, from time to time, goes to the vet. The vet does not take Obamacare, okay? Newsflash. Although if I could get my dog registered for, she's getting a little old. She's 10 years old now. So now maybe like I could get her into like Medi-Cal or something. But at any rate, my doctor doesn't accept Medi-Cal, my vet, right? And instead, what does he do? He takes cash or credit. But at any rate, what does dog medicine cost? The answer is, it can't cost more than what people can spend. This is important. This is why when you go to the hospital, and if you've ever been to the hospital, hopefully not, but if you go to the hospital and you get the bill afterwards, as most people don't even read, right, because it goes to their insurance company and all that stuff, you're so removed from it as a consumer. But you get your bill and you see, oh my gosh, I got billed $500 for a Band-Aid. There's literally a line item in there, $500 for a Band-Aid. Why? Well, I don't need to get into the why there, because I'm going to get into the reason why not when you go to the vet. The reason that doesn't happen at your vet's office when my little Lucy goes in for a checkup is this. If the vet charges $100 for a procedure, he has figured out that that is a price that most people will pay. They have that on their credit card to pay. They have that to give. They have that, you know, they can pay that. If the vet came along and charged $5,000 for that procedure, the way it is in, you know, at the hospital, you know, where we go. Well, no, you don't have that, or $200,000 for a surgery. Who do you know that has $200,000? So one time we're taking care of our friend's dog, and this crazy thing happens. The dog suddenly slips a disc and needs emergency spine surgery. And so we rush him into a little doggy emergency room, and they call the top, in this, I kid you not, folks, the top doggy spine neurosurgeon in Southern California. And do you know what the top doggy spine neurosurgeon charges for a procedure on a wiener dog? Well, I'll tell you, it was like $7,000, maybe less, maybe five. I don't remember. A lot of money, but it is a money that most of us can put on a credit card. It hurts, but it's something that you can pay. And trust me, that neurosurgeon is doing a lot better than most doctors at Kaiser. I can tell you that right now. And the reason is the government isn't involved in the transaction. The government isn't setting the price. It's what the market will bear. There's no insurance company involved. It's just pure market economics. And so that's the minimum wage myth is that if you give somebody $2 more an hour by governmental fiat, you automatically increase their standard of living. And you do, correct, for a New York minute. And after that, gradually that gets absorbed. That's inflation. That's how inflation works. One of the causes of inflation. And the immediate and unintended consequence of rising wages, again, by the government telling people, mandating that they must charge at least X amount of dollars per hour, is that the cost of goods, and not just goods for rich people, folks, but cost of goods for everyone in the community goes up. And who does that hurt? The people who have the least amount of money. I'm fortunate. I've done well for myself. If my burger goes up from $5 to $7, that really doesn't affect me. But I know a lot of people who that affects big time. It might mean the difference between how they feed their family in a given week. And the fact that you've raised their minimum wage a little bit, but then had the cost of their goods go up across the board, is potentially a net loss for them, and at very worst, a break even. And it's an unnecessary intrusion into the natural balance of an economy, which is something I really believe in. Because those evil companies, folks, those evil companies, to make money, they have to deliver the best good for the best price. And as consumers, we always win when that happens. So, if Bernie Sanders becomes president, I don't even know what, it's not going to happen. You know, since we're talking about ridiculous things, I'm going to close with this today. I don't even know how to say this. So there is a university that is going to build a blacks-only segregated dorm And apparently people are okay with this. Robbie, have you heard about this? And it's run by a professor there who I presume is black. And his idea is that he's going to build a space. I'll read it to you. A space for African-American to, one, come together and validate their experiences that they may have on campus. And that it's going to be a space where they can have conversation, also talk with individuals who come from the same background and who share the same experience. I think we need these kind of dorms for liberals. I mean, I would wish that on university campuses we could segregate socialists and liberals into their own wackadoodle dorm, let them validate their self-experiences, and leave this country alone. Can't make this stuff up. Folks, we're out of time. This is the fastest hour on the radio, folks. I'm going to tell you that right now. Yeah. So next week, we'll be back. And follow us on, we got all sorts of social media. Go to samnation.com, and check out our Twitter, check out our Facebook, check out our Instagram. We got a lot of funny stuff on Instagram. And we will see you here back next week. I'm excited. I'm looking forward. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.